expected answer. Now, is that really praying? We should pray believing. And that's where the great division comes here. The early church had been persecuted beyond measure. And they met in little groups, and they were frightened, and they were helpless. And Peter was in prison. So what could they do? What hope was there for them? And it is here that the Lord teaches them a most unusual lesson through a most unusual miracle. Now, the wondrous works of God, multitudes are saved, we know, and individuals, the Ethiopian eunuch, and also Saul, who was an enemy, became Paul, and also Cornelius, a Gentile, and that barrier was broken down. But what after that? The presence of God, the power of God, and we love prayer to God, linked together, we are discovering something new. The church was entering a new phase. There had been persecution, and it was intensifying, and at that rate, they would be eliminated. Now, about that time, hence the king stretched forth his hand to me. Now then, he's certain of the church. Many are martyred. Peter was imprisoned. Peter, therefore, was kept in prison, but prayer was made without ceasing of the church unto God for him. But prayer was made, and the situation arose which led in this direction. And when Herod would have brought forth the same night, Peter was sleeping bound with two chains, and the keeper before the door kept the prison. The timing all seems lost. The leader is facing execution. They are losing heart, and they have forgotten how to pray. They do not know how to draw on the resources of God. But prayer was made. You can say that was wonderful. At least prayer was made. We're given an account of a miracle. I'll just read the verses. And behold, the angel of the Lord came upon him, and a light shone on the prison. And he smote Peter on the side and said, and raised him, saying, arise up quickly. And his chain fell off from his hands. And the angel said unto him, gird thyself and bind on thy sandals. And so he did, and said unto him, cast thy garments upon thee, and follow me. Peter could hardly believe what was happening. It is a natural account. And he went out and followed him. And followed him. He felt it was not true, which was done by the angel, but thought he saw in a vision. It seemed too good to be true, and he could hardly believe that this was happening to him. And when they were past the first and second ward, they came unto the iron gate, which led it into the city, which opened to them of its own accord. And they went out and passed through one street, and forthwith the angel departed from him. It's like a dream. And when Peter was come to himself, he said, now I know of a surety that the Lord has sent his angel and hath delivered me out of the hand of Herod and from all the expectations of the people of the Jews. He fully realized what had happened. Then his first desire is to meet with the people of God. That's natural enough. And he sought out their prayer meeting, and he found them. Very much like in Philippians 4:6, we have, be careful for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your request be made known unto God. When he knocked, and a little girl called Rhoda came to the door and told them that Peter was there, and they said she was hallucinating. And they said unto her, thou art mad. But she constantly affirmed that it was even so. Then said they, it is his angel. Yet they prayed for Peter, and Peter continued knocking. And when they had obeyed, they opened the door and saw him, they were astonished. Now, why is this important? It's important because it shows to them that prayer is meant to be answered. Peter explains, but lo, beckoning unto them with a hand, hold their peace, he declared unto them how the Lord had brought him out of the prison. And he said, go, show these things unto James and to the brethren. And he departed and went into another place. Now, that's the account there. Now, as soon as it was day, there was no small stir among the soldiers. What was become of Peter? And Herod was ruthless. He's absolutely ruthless. And when Herod had sought for him and found him not, he examined the keeper and commanded that they should be put to death. And he went down from Judea to Caesarea and went on his journey. Now then, that's how Herod behaves. The poor jailer, the poor keeper, because this miracle had happened, it seemed that they had failed, and he has them executed. It doesn't occur to them, it might be another factor. Now then, we go in a certain direction. We come into a spiritual dimension. The importance of prayer. That's what we are learning. And that's what God is teaching the early church. You've been fighting, you are brave, you pray, you do your best, but you're dying out. You do not understand. And he tries to show them who it is that is with you and what it is you are establishing. That God is with his people and his kingdom, and that the gates of hell shall not prevail against my church. Truly, Christ is the Son of God. Something real, lifelike in our prayer. Prayer runs along it. All things to God. Now, I'd like to give an example here. It's from Nehemiah. It gives also there a man who learnt the value of prayer. He's in prison. No, he's not in prison. He's a wine taster for the emperor. And you know how ruthless they were. And it came to pass, when I heard these words, that I sat down and wept. He heard that Judea was in a mess, that they were scattered, that they knew no direction. And it came to pass, when I heard these words, that I sat down and wept and mourned certain days, and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. He said, "Oh God, thy people, what has happened to them? Where is their faith? Where is our church? Where are we? What can we do?" And thine ear now be attentive, and thine eyes open, that thou mayest hear the prayer of thy servants, which I pray before thee now, the day and night for the children of Israel. Now, do you remember the answer to that? It's a fairly long passage. "Wherefore the king said unto me, Why is thy countenance sad, seeing thou art not sick? This is nothing else but sorrow of heart." Have you known that? Sorrow of heart. Then I was very sore afraid. Of course he was. You had to be happy before the emperor. "And said unto the king, Let the king live forever. Why should not my countenance be sad when the city, the place of my father's sepulchres, lieth waste, and the gates thereof are consumed with fire? Then the king said unto me, For what dost thou make request? So I prayed to the God of heaven." Notice, I prayed to the God of heaven, said to the king. Interesting. I prayed to the God of heaven, said to the king. "And I unto the king, if I please the king, and if thy servant has found favor in thy sight, that thou wouldst send me unto Judah, unto the city of my father's sepulchres, that I may build it. And the king said unto me," the queen was also sitting by him, "For how long shall thy journey be, and when wilt thou return? So it pleased the king to send me, and I set him a time. Moreover, I said unto the king, If it please the king, let letters be given to the governors beyond the river, that they may convey me over till I come unto Judah." Now then, what does this involve? It involves in prayer. We might say, oh, we want people to be saved. We want things to be as they were one day. But why not be realistic? It is terrible today. Absolutely terrible. Those who are older say it's unrecognizable to what we once knew. So we have some, anyway, sorrow of heart. Sorrow of heart. Not just depressed, not just feeling, what a pity, things could change, I don't know, but sorrow of heart. Have you had sorrow of heart? Of course you have, when it's something that is dear to your heart. He's praying for a nation, but God is present. "Wherefore the king said unto me," he sent him there. "So I prayed to the king, God of heaven, and I said unto the king." See, I like that. "So I prayed to the God of heaven and said to the king." Things are getting better. Calling on God into the situation. What they were doing then, what he was doing, was calling God into a hopeless situation. The same thing was happening in the early church. Peter now was calling on God, or God rather made him. It's my church. There should be sorrow of heart. There should be some feeling. So he made him. And they were praying, and they were praying earnestly, but they wouldn't believe. In fact, when he knocked the door and Rhoda went to the door, they told her not to be silly. They thought she was hallucinating. And these people who were praying for Peter did not believe in the possibility that he could be rescued. Now that's the kind of prayer that we often have. It's nice prayer. It's a sound prayer. It can be very inspiring prayer, but it doesn't do anything. Let us hear. It doesn't do anything. I said it. He recognizes God's will when it is past our understanding. This eventually accept, but to pray, it is an area of faith. Now this can be, you know, when we pray for our children. Have you unsaved children? You're trying to convince yourself they're all right, and you know they're not. You have unsaved children. You can pray for them. But are you praying expecting God to answer? Is your prayer the result of sorrow of heart? Lord, I truly, truly am heartbroken. I truly, truly, Lord. But supposing then you heard they've been converted in some place. Oh, well, no. Those things are going about the place. I don't believe. Were you praying? Were you praying? Pray, believing. If you shall ask anything in my name, I will do it. Well, Lord, that's a tall order for you. He says, if we shall ask anything, anything in his name, he will do it. Now, by anything, we don't mean selfish silly things, but things that bring sorrow of hearts, things that are real, and things that are spiritual. You want them to be Christian people. That's for children or for parents. It's terrible to have unsaved parents, and for them too, and to consider, well, we believe in heaven, but do you believe in hell? There is a hell, and we're inclined to pussyfoot that. There is a hell. One preacher I knew was so real in how he prayed. On the right side of the stage was hell, and on the left was heaven. And he'd point there, and everybody would look in that direction, expecting to see something. They believed him. Do you believe in heaven? Do you believe in hell? Do you wish anybody to be in hell? Do you wish? Then change your prayers. Pray, believing. And don't stop asking. What we do ask rests on his will. We must not stop asking. Give me the faith which can remove and sink the mountains to a plain. Give me the childlike praying love which longs to build thy house again. Thy love, let it my overpower over all my simple soul. Devour then this. I like this. Here we are. Come, my soul, thy soup prepare. Jesus loves to answer prayer. He himself has bid thee pray, therefore will not say thee nay. Thou art coming to a king. Note, large petitions will thee bring, for his grace and power are such none can ever ask too much. Well, With my burden I begin, Lord, remove the load of sin, load of sin. Let thy blood for sinners spilt set my conscience free from guilt. Lord, I come to thee for rest, the possessions of my breast. There thy blood bought right, maintain, and without a rival reigns. Why are we pilgrim here? Let thy love my spirit cheer, as my guide, my God, my friend, lead me to my journey's end. Show me what I have to do, every hour my strength renew. Let me live a life of faith, let me die thy people's death. Dying, believing. Living, believing. Now then we can pray very beautifully, very beautifully. Now I'll finish with an illustration. It's about an American preacher. Actually, he eventually started a college. He was the first minister of the First Presbyterian Church in New York, so he was a very significant figure. His name was A.J. Gordon. And he was very, he was evangelical. And this is actually a dream he had. He dreamt that he was in the pulpit. And he noticed somebody in the congregation. And after he had read, he said to himself, I wonder what he thought of my elocution. It's very fine. And then he prayed, and he looked and said, I wonder if he was impressed with my earnest praying. I wonder. Then he preached, and during the last hymn, he got somebody to close the service, and he rushed to the door. And he went to the door, and this man had gone during the hymn. And he said to the doorkeeper, what did that man say anything? No, but he gave me a card to give to you. And I looked at the card and it said, Jesus of Nazareth. And I said, oh Lord, what do you think of such a wretch as I am? Oh Lord. So when I went to church that day, I preached to the glory of God, and not to my glory. I preached the gospel of salvation, and not just a display of my doctrinal knowledge. And his ministry, I've got the book, was never the same. Now, that is a book. We were having tea, Morgan and I, in the home in Lucha, of Aaron Roberts, he had died, of course, with his sister, who was a member in my church. And she was very nice. And she gave me this book, Life in the Spirit. She said, this is the book that Aaron read just before the revival. Oh, I treasured that. Oh, I did. In fact, I treasured it too much. And do you know what happened? There was a friend saying, a dear, dear friend. And he said, I'd love to borrow that book. I said, well, all right. And he took it. And he died. And his wife had no idea which book it was amongst all his books. So if you see it, buy it for me. Gone forever. But not what it said. Not the message. Pray to God. Pray believing. Honor God. Honor the gospel. Delight in him. And large petitions to him bring. Recognize in your own heart the difference between sorrow of heart and just a sentimental feeling. Now, shall we leave it there? Sure. Okay.
That we'll sing hymn 1050. Pray without ceasing praying.